to please myself. And something I noticed, as I noticed about my inability to speak Spanish, was that I am, if I'm taking a bit of an old etude book, an old study book from my days as a bass player, and I had collected a lot of, obviously in 16 years you collect a lot of music, and if I just for practice, just for getting my hands in shape and learning how to make the sound on the cello, although it's not that hard when you're coming from the bass where you have to fight every note out of the bloody thing, I find that I could not play the cello using my old bass music because the patterns in the fingering in the left hand are different. And I had inside my left hand operates, seemed to operate independently from my brain and my eyes. I had this pattern of the bass fingering in my left hand, even though I was sitting there playing the cello. So I would translate from my brain to the music, and the fingers, I had to force the fingers to do something else. So I always seem to, in my patterns of learning Spanish or the cello, I have to seem to go through a familiar middle territory, being in language French and in music the bass. So instead of making that leap directly over and eliminating the middleman, as they say in retail. So I'm going to have to work on that, and I will. I'll be okay. So anyway, this, as I said, is a wonderful book by Myrna Zambrano, published by Seal Press in 1985. And the book is divided. It's a complete copy of the book in Spanish in front and a complete copy of the book in English in the back, which is wonderful and very useful. It is not just for the Latina in an abusive relationship. It's for all women in abusive relationships, but with a special focus on the Latina. And it deals with a lot of the cultural stigma and various things that are associated with being from a Latin culture. But the parts I'm going to be reading are fairly generic, and there are some myths that are exploded on battered women and whatever. And there is also an explanation of the cycle of violence. And these are the two segments of the book that I thought they would be best to be read in a situation like this where I'm talking about violence against women. And this is called Social and Cultural Reasons for Abuse. This is chapter 2 of the book. The subtitle is It True What They Say About Battered Women? People say many things about why women are beaten by their husbands or boyfriends. You may have heard that it's because the family is poor, or the woman has a job and isn't home, or because she's not very smart. But women of all cultures, all races, of all income levels, and of all personalities can be and are physically and emotionally abused by the men they are involved with. Most of what is said about battered women is meant to excuse behavior that is violent, irrational, and illegal. Most of what is said is cleverly designed to get around the basic fact that one person beating another is wrong and cannot be excused. Most of it also blames the person being beaten instead of the person doing the beating. But why should men be protected and the women blamed? When people, or the men themselves, try to make excuses for the violence or blame women as the cause, they are denying and ignoring a very serious, complex problem. Perhaps worse, they perpetuate myths about domestic violence, false ideas and false reasons why men abuse women, and why women should accept it as natural, that circulate throughout society in movies, magazines, bars, and beauty salons until they are so widespread that no one questions them and everyone believes they are true. The most terrible and untruthful thing is that these myths make abused women believe that it is all their fault and that they can control the violence if they really want to. Don't believe these myths. They are false. They don't change or help the situation. They allow it to get worse. They let men get away with cruelty and brutality and make women fearful and submissive. Instead of believing what people say, you can learn some of the facts about domestic violence that can help to change your anger and frustration into action and fulfillment. Myth number one, battered women like it or else they would leave. False. No one likes being threatened, slapped, shoved, thrown around, choked, hit, or kicked. But it is difficult to leave a man who is your only support or who has sworn to kill you if you leave. It is difficult to leave if you don't know where to go and have children to think about and provide for. A woman doesn't stay in a violent relationship because she likes it. She stays because many times pressure from her family, church, and community leaves her feeling she has few, if any, alternatives. Myth number two. If the battered woman sticks it out long enough, the relationship will change for the better. False. If the woman doesn't leave, get legal help or counseling, the beatings and mental torture are likely to get worse, not better. Many women stay hoping the abuse will eventually stop. Some finally leave when the violence is so bad they want to kill the abuser or know the next time he will kill them. It's dangerous to wait until this point of desperation. Almost half of all women killed in the United States are killed by their boyfriends or husbands. Myth number three. If he didn't drink, he wouldn't beat his partner. False. Although in many relationships alcohol appears to provoke or encourage violent behavior, women are physically abused by men who are sober and men who don't drink. Alcohol is just a part of the reason he hits. At times the alcohol gives men a false sense of power. It cannot be said that it is the only cause or that if he stops drinking, the beating will stop. Myth number four. Women deserve to be beaten because of the way they behave. False. No one deserves to be beaten no matter what she does. Women who are beaten know only too well that it happens most of the time for no reason at all. If the dinner is served late, she gets beaten. If she serves dinner on time, she gets beaten. He is never pleased or satisfied with anything she does. His anger and his desire to have total control are the causes of his outburst, not her actions. Myth number five. If he works, is a good provider, and good with the children, a woman shouldn't ask for more. She should tolerate some of his character defects. False. A husband who is good with the kids and brings home a paycheck shouldn't be excused from violent behavior. Violence in the home should not be tolerated under any circumstances. The wife deserves to be well treated just like any member of the family. No one would approve of staying with a man because he only beat the children. Myth number six. Battering doesn't affect the children. They are just kids and don't notice these things. False. Battering most definitely affects children. In fact, a high percentage of men who are batterers saw their own mothers beaten. Battering can be learned. It is very possible that if your children witness beatings, they too will grow up to be batterers or the victims of abuse. Also, living in the midst of an explosive situation frequently contributes to learning and personality problems in children. Although kids may not talk about the violence, they know it exists, and it has a deep impression on them. Myth number seven. This is God's will, and no one should interfere. False. God may plan for much of what happens in our lives, but he would never plan for a woman to be regularly beaten by her partner. We may not be able to avoid something like a fatal disease or the death of a child, but what control we do have over our lives can be used to help stop the violence. It's far more likely that it is God's will that we live in peace and harmony than in the middle of violence. Myth number eight. Yes, women should not be beaten, but what goes on in a home is no one else's business. False. Domestic violence is everyone's problem. Women are maimed and killed every day. Physical assault is wrong and it is illegal. We are all responsible for its end. Your husband has no more right to harm you than a stranger who would be convicted and sent to jail if he beat you or tried to rape you in your home. Myth number 9. If women would fight back, men wouldn't keep on beating them. False. Even if women do fight back, they are beaten, sometimes even more severely. Most women are physically smaller than most men and no match when it comes to a fist fight. Myth number 10. Battering is a problem of the poor and uneducated. False. Battering is a crime against women that affects all communities. Abused women can be rich or poor. They can be white, black, or Latina. They can have a high school education or a college degree. Although you may know only of poor women who are beaten, wealthy women are also victims of domestic violence. These women usually have more resources to keep their bruises from public view. They can see private doctors instead of emergency rooms. They can consult lawyers instead of legal aid. They may live in less crowded areas where people don't hear what's going on. They are less likely to ask for help from public agencies and are better able to keep their problems private. Admitting you are being battered does not show you are poor or uneducated. It says that you are being taken advantage of physically and mentally, and that your partner needs immediate help. The violence in your home should not be a shameful secret that keeps you from getting help. And here is an outline of the patterns in abusive relationships, the cycle of violence, from the same book. For some couples, there seems to be a pattern to the violence in their home. A period of bliss, where everything appears to be going smoothly, is followed by a buildup of tension and another battering incident. Not all couples follow this pattern or follow it in the order presented here. This cycle was documented by Lenore E. Walker and is discussed in her book, The Battered Woman. It is a pattern that she observed in many couples. Because the woman in the couple cannot stop the cycle, it makes her feel more and more helpless with each repetition. Sometimes this is another reason why she does not leave the relationship. As a battered woman, you might recognize this cycle. The first phase is where tension builds up. In this phase, there are so-called minor incidents that you may try to ignore. He pushes or shoves a little, has tantrums. You might try everything to calm him, from agreeing with him that it is all your fault to staying out of his way. You may deny your own feelings of anger and hurt so that things won't get worse. You may make excuses for his behavior and blame yourself for making him angry. He is very jealous, possessive, and verbally abusive. The psychological torture you endure may become unbearable. The second phase is where the severe battering may take place. It can last from a few hours to a few days. He appears to be out of control and does not stop until he feels emotionally drained or exhausted, or feels he has punished you enough. You might feel that you provoked the beating. Extreme nervousness, depression, head or stomach aches are often felt in anticipation of the explosion. The police are often called during this phase. The third phase is commonly called the honeymoon stage. He may beg your forgiveness, say he will never do it again, promise you the moon and the stars. For some women, it is the beginning of hope that the abuse will never happen again. They try to forget the psychological and physical torture and become the obedient, agreeable, sweet wife he has always wanted. Other women use this time of reconciliation to leave the relationship. The shock and denial that many times follow the beating have worn off, and they know all too well what follows. Phase one again. Couples vary as to how long each phase lasts. For some, it is years between each. If you see yourself anywhere in this cycle, you need outside help to get you both out of it. You may feel that there is nothing you can do anymore, that you're not capable of stopping the abuse. You must realize that anyone who is hurt the way you are can lose the will and the physical strength it takes to say no to the abuse. Your hope that he will change may end, but your situation is not hopeless. New hope for a better life outside of your relationship can give you renewed energy and motivation for change. And this this is a handbook, basically a battered woman's handbook, which describes everything from this cycle of violence and the myths that women are unfortunately brainwashed with or inundated with. And it goes all the way into describing, it gives descriptions of wounds and tells you whether or not, if you have suffered this particular kind of wound, you need to get to the hospital because you're dying. It's a very complete little book, and I was very glad to have it across my desk. 5:20 on a Sunday morning. You're listening to Heresy. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and the topic this morning, in case you haven't guessed yet, is violence against women. I'm going to play some music now and come back with a poem by Minnie Bruce Pratt and a piece of writing from a periodical called Sinister Wisdom on how a battered woman became empowered to try to make changes in her life and in her social situation. So let's listen to some Holy Sisters now. Machine Gun.
A knife in the stomach. Lies, you protected yourself and left me squirming. Science works together, are never separate. But you pretend that nothing changes with the kiss goodbye. Goodbye. Machine gun visions in my mind. I learned too much to keep smiling. Subject. Next to self-pity. Now I find that the attendant ticks are what you've turned against me. Machine gun visions in my mind. I've learned too much to keep smiling. Thank you.
Machine Gun. Holy Sisters of the Gaga Dada, an LA girl group that I like a lot. I only know that they have the one album. Anyway, the next piece I have to read is a poem by Minnie Bruce Pratt, and I'm going to do something that she probably wouldn't be too happy about, but I have thought long and hard about it and decided to do it this way. The piece is called Walking Song, and walking is spelled W-A-U-L-K-I-N-G. And the explanation of it here is, walking tunes are sung by groups of Hebridean women as they work woolen cloth with their hands and feet to strengthen its weave. The women measure their task by the number of songs needed to complete the work, rather than by minutes or hours. Each walking song has a narrative which may be altered by the lead singer, as well as a unique refrain so ancient that the meaning of its syllables have been lost. The refrains below may have been sung by women at work as much as 1,000 years ago. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave out these refrains. Number one, because I cannot pronounce any of the syllables that are here, being in, I believe, some form of Gaelic. Number two, because I decided even if I could make something up to go in the place of this refrain, that it is distracting from the poem. So if she's listening, if any friends of Minnie Bruce Pratt are listening, I do apologize, but I have decided to do it this way. And again, it's called Walking Song. At first she would not answer when I asked what was wrong. Then she told me what had happened that afternoon when she went into work. Later she gave me the shirt to mend, a thin Kmart cotton with lines of yellow, blue, and red running from gray to brighter plaid. She had worn it the winter we met. Under the lines I felt her heartbeat. Many times I had held her and felt her heart beating beneath that thin cloth. In the summer haze she had gone to work. The man with the knife stopped her. He shoved her from the door to the straggling hedge. He jerked at her shirt and ripped the seams. He cut the buttons off one by one. He raped her and tried to cut her throat. He tried to cut her throat. And he did. The red of her blood crossed the plaid of her shirt. He asked if she liked it. When she would not say yes, he glinted the knife and he laughed. He laughed and he left. She lay in the dust, smoked a cigarette, got up, went home to her trailer, took a bath. She washed the shirt, put it away, and looked to see what else was torn. We swore his knife would not part us, yet fear divided us with many blades. She did not want me to touch her, to feel semen and dirt on her skin. When I moved suddenly, she saw the sun flash on the knife blade. She wanted to know where my hands were at all times. When I slept with my arm around her, she dreamed he had her pinned down, and woke night after night saying no. Night after night saying no. She feared that I would not touch her, would touch her, and that I would. I wanted the red mark to peel off her throat like a band-aid, so she would be herself without this pain, unscarred, unchanging, not a woman who could have been the dead behind the quick stop store, a line of ants running from her neck, a woman her friends would not touch. After 3 months, we wanted her over it, to be done with dying. When she heard her rape, each time a rock cracked under her feet behind her as she crossed an empty parking lot. I heard her death each time a friend spoke the word rape, as a matter of fact, as the evening news. That winter, on weekends when we shared a bed, we shared bad dreams. We twisted in the sheets. Some nights she heard her voice cry out and woke herself, breath tearing her throat. Some nights I felt her shake beside me, caught in the hedge in the December wind. Before I touched her, I called her name to wake her before his hand could reach. We held hands as we talked in the dark. The shirt lay folded, unmended, in my drawer. It has been 3 years. The shirt was mended, not thrown away. We rise at dawn to dress for work. I touch her bare arm. She is alive. Her heartbeats rush under my fingers. Her flesh is solid, not crumbled to dust. Under my hands, her shoulders spread broad, an outcrop of limestone. Under her skin, layers of muscle from heft and lift, the weight of her work. She has made herself strong, enough to knock a man down, enough to tell me one night what his hands had done, the exact secret wounds. I wanted my hands to be rain for her, to wash away all hurt, the trace of blood. I did what I could. I took out the shirt, sewed the buttons back on one by one, sewed over each seam twice by hand. He would not ruin what we had made. She wore the shirt, walked alone to her job. She would not live in tatters and shreds. But some afternoons he got his death. When we heard of a nurse off work, the men, blackberry vines in an empty lot, a woman raped at the Gulf station, stabbed through both eyes with a screwdriver so she would not see to find him later. Then we could not bear witness to our life. We bought beer and drank to become like stone, no live woman or dead in our touch. We cried out with the voice of falling rocks. We fell asleep, dead weight in each other's arms, but always we swore that we would wake up. It has been 3 years. I wake before dawn in the dark. I think of the mended shirts. It still hangs in her closet. The pattern of red, blue, yellow lines seamed together. Her scar has faded to a thin white line. I can touch her breast. I can feel her heart beating. He has not ruined what we have made. At dawn we will rise to dress for work. When she got to work at 5 till 8 this morning, a woman named Millie was shot in the parking lot as she left her car. The man with the gun watched her blood disappear into the asphalt. Her boss, other women, watched from a doorway. At first she asked for help. The man left to rape a woman in the next street. In emergency, she fought with the nurses who held her to the cart, said, "Lie down." She said, "I know I'm dying. I want to sit up." And she did before she died, while they were saying, "Be quiet, you'll be better." She was a secretary, 3 months pregnant. Do you want me to be quiet? You're tired of the words blood, rape, death. So am I. I had ended these lines at the last refrain, but this morning I heard about Millie. I remembered again your blood in the dirt, your stomach exposed to the knife. I want to keep harm from you. I want to clothe and protect you with my arms. I look at my hands that held the needle and thread. We resist by whatever means we can. At work, your arm has thrust, your hand has hefted 2 feet of steel pipe over a counter at the man who threatened. You say, "Next time I fight back, even if I die." Your hands are not quiet. Your voice is angry. I love you because you have refused to die. This poem is for you, to pin to the mended shirt like the paper slip you find in a new pocket. Number 49, but you know it's a woman, all day folding sleeves around cardboard. At work, almost dead on her feet, she folds the plaid thin fabrics. She thinks of what her hands make at home when she leaves the line. The machines are silent. Her steps make a poem to the rhythm of her heart, like a poem for you to pin on the mended shirt.
The day I lived in terror,
The night I lived in fright, for as long as I can remember, lady, don't go out alone at night, no. Lady, don't go out alone at night. But I don't accept the verdict, it's an old one anyway. 'Cause nowadays a woman can't even go out in the middle of the day, no, no, can't even.